Thank you. People look like they're wilting a little bit, so we'll move away from a lecture on some methodologies. I'm going to present a particular form of modelling called computable general equilibrium model, which is an economic technique for modelling whole economies. But rather than go through what the process is about, I thought I'd present you with a piece of work relevant to obesity and nutrition that's just been completed and will be published in The Lancet in about a month's time, which gives you the idea of hopefully the sort of, or illustrates the usefulness of this sort of approach. Whole set of authors, really that's just to say that when we're looking at developing these sorts of systems, it's very important to think multidisciplinary about this. We have a set of people there. Karen is a public health doctor who adds nutrition particularly to this. Alan Danger is a nutritional epidemiologist. Marcus does lots of the maths on this. We have some colleagues from Brazil, because that's one of the case studies I'm going to present. Zaid at the bottom there is a systems modeler, and he does some agent-based modeling and various other forms of modeling constructs. So it's important for us to have teams involved in this, I think, when we're looking at developing systems. Background to this, I'm sure I don't need to tell the audience here about the importance of the transition to diets high in saturated fat, sugar. Food consumption, of course, is a major modifiable risk factor. Within that, we have a development over the last, continual development in recent years, decades, around the globalization of industry around food, agriculture, which, of course, affects health considerably. But we have somewhat of a disconnect quite often between those who are engaged in agricultural research and those who are engaged in nutrition and the health end of this spectrum. So the purpose of this paper, which was commissioned by Lancet, was to try to illustrate the importance of bringing these together, looking at the health and the economic impacts and trade impacts and agricultural impacts simultaneously to get more of a holistic picture of what happens if you do certain things. So what we went for was just a very fairly quick rudimentary assessment of essentially the working title for this paper was what would happen if we all became vegetarian tomorrow, which the Lancet insisted we changed at the last minute. But essentially, he was saying what would happen if we did undertake to have a healthy diet. Now, I don't want to get into discussions around what a healthy diet is, but we took this WHO recommendations, and the key point there is highlighted around saturated fat in diet should be under 10%. What happens if we implement that? Well, we could do that a number of ways. We can implement it in a country, we can implement it globally. What do we do here? We took two particular cases. We took the UK, because we're based there and it was easier to do, but it is a high-income country. It's got that transition. We're experiencing a rapid increase in nutrition-related NCDs, and we effectively do produce food, but we import a very considerable amount. We took Brazil as well, partly again because we have experience in Brazil, but also because it's a very major producer of particularly animal and animal-sourced foods. It's also a very large consumer of those products and a major exporter of these to countries like the UK. Unfortunately, we didn't have the same sort of national data as we had in the UK, but we did have very good data for Sao Paulo, so we've kind of proxied the whole of Brazil, so we can discuss that later with one city. How do we parameterize that in a model? Essentially, what we're looking at here, to simplify things again, is, say, the link between saturated fat and ischemic heart disease. We're going to try to get to these WHO guidelines of saturated fat consumption, and we're going to do that through reducing animal source foods. What that means is that if we're in the UK, what we'll have to do is have a 22% reduction in the amount of dietary fat consumed. In Brazil, they have a healthier diet to begin with in this sense, so they have a smaller mountain to climb there, a smaller reduction in saturated fat. And we can split this in a number of ways. So this just gives some information which I won't dwell on, but basically we've got our targeted reduction there. This is in adults only. And we can achieve this in a number of ways. We can go for kind of across-the-board cut in all sorts of animal source foods, or we could focus on one or two particular products. We could go just for basic meat consumption or dairy products, for example. and that entails different sorts of proportionate reductions in those specific products to achieve our overall reduction in saturated fat intake. So then we get to modelling some of the health effects here, and this was particularly Alan and Zaid were doing this using hazard ratios from a recent meta-analysis and WHO's comparative risk assessment method. There was an assumption that the dietary change would be adopted by the population immediately, so we didn't have issues of temporal change to deal with, which I'll come back to in later on. And we had these health effects calculated to relative disease burdens estimated from WHO's projection for 2010. Essentially what happens if you crunch that together is that if we achieve this reduction in saturated fat in the UK, we'd gain something like 22% of disability-adjusted life years, and we'd have 27% reduction in premature deaths in a single year. In Brazil, because they've got this lower reduction happening because they're already a little bit healthier, clearly the health gain to them of moving to be a little bit more healthy in their diet in terms of saturated fat gives them a lower health benefit. What happens to the economics? It's where we used our computable general equilibrium model. Essentially, we baselined this on a particular year, and we went for 2004, so pre-financial recessions and so forth. And what we essentially do is we shock our model. We're saying we want to reduce consumption of saturated fats. We can do this with a whole range of animal products, just meat, just dairy. And that is essentially a shock to the economy. It's changing the demand and therefore what's going to be produced in the agricultural sectors of our economies we're interested in. And so we want to combine that change in demand and supply with the health benefits. So we have various shocks. We have changes in labor supply, because we have a reduction in mortality. We have an increase in labor productivity because we have healthier workers. We have reductions in domestic consumption and therefore domestic demand and production of agricultural products. And we can impact on imports and exports. Because if we're an importing country and reduce our demand for products, what we're doing is reducing the demand for another country's products and exports. That becomes important in a moment. And we had a whole other set of parameter assumptions. This is just taken from the paper. I'm not going to go through the figures there, but we have to work through working days that are going to be gained from this change in our healthier workforce, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see where that's coming from. And then we ran four particular scenarios. We had an impact domestically, so we would take, say, the UK to start with and say what happens is we achieve this reduction in saturated fat consumption domestically. So we're only going to impact on our domestic market. Could do the same for Brazil. Also, though, I said that Brazil was a major exporter. So it could be the case that we stress healthy diets and reduce saturated fat and convince the population of the UK to give up deep frying Mars bars or whatever it is that we do. And that then impacts purely on our imports. And that will impact actually on Brazil. So we'll get the health benefits in the UK, but Brazil will get the economic impacts. And then, of course, we can combine that. For a country like Brazil, they could have some changes domestically as well as experience this decline in demand for their exports if we had a fairly sort of global reduction in saturated fat. So the headline result, in a sense, is contained in this diagram, which is our impacts on gross domestic product, or our sort of national income, national wealth. On the left there, we have the scenarios around the reduction being across the board in terms of animal source foods. In the middle there, we have just impacting through meat consumption, and on the right-hand side, just through dairy. So you can see a few things start to come out. Clearly, if we spread the impact across all these animal source foods, we have a much lower cost impact to the UK or Brazilian economies than we do if we just focus a reduction on one particular product, like meat or dairy. Brazil tends to do worse than the UK in proportionate terms. That's because it has a slightly higher income of households due to agriculture, given its particular level of development, of course. But also we saw they had a much lower health impact. So they're getting some economic hits, but they're not offsetting that by higher health gains. They're getting a lower health gain for these particular economic hits. And on occasion, when we look at there's some areas where Brazil may potentially gain, and that's due to some mechanisms working through the fact that if we reduce the international demand, then what will happen is that will be effectively soaked up in increased in domestic demand for those products that are no longer exported. So then we start to get a little bit into the complexities of how we flow things through the system in this way, which I won't dwell on. We can also disaggregate this across sectors in a number of ways. This is just one example to go through, looking at all animal source foods, and it shows something that's fairly obvious here, which is that the sectors that get the biggest change, of course, are those that are directly affected around the meat, animal, dairy, but also some offsetting there. So it may be that, in this case, grains and crops may experience a gain from this procedure. And what's hidden on this particular diagram, because everything else looks like a flat line, is actually if you just change the scale a little bit, you'll see it's not quite a flat line. Because if people are not consuming meat and meat products, they're going to spend that on something else. So who's going to gain? Kind of depends. They could spend it on the grains and the fruits and vegetables, or they could spend it on TVs or something else. So who's going to gain in the economy is an interesting issue, which I'll come back to. Some limitations and assumptions around health there. We have got this sort of limitation on the health impact, which is probably going to be conservative. We would probably expect a higher health impact. We didn't consider any positive impact. So if you do substitute into these healthier foods, is there an additional benefit, a positive benefit from consumption of these, in addition to removing the negative effects of not consuming the meat or animal products? And we assume this dietary change was immediate, of course. In terms of the economic model, we've got a couple of implications here. One that was quite interesting was that because of some of the magnitudes of the effect here, certainly when we're looking at exports to Brazil, for instance, so if we really go for hitting consumption of animal source products, much of that is sourced from somewhere like Brazil, you have such a big impact on Brazil that actually the model doesn't cope anymore. And what that highlights is you've got to restructure your economy. You're not tinkering about with moving sectors around. You're saying that the economy ends up being restructured because it can't cope as it is, which is quite interesting, the level of impact that could have on a country. And this issue of substitution. Should we assume that if you don't consume meat, you consume something healthy because you want the same volume of food in some way? Or do we say if you don't consume meat because it's very expensive, you have more money left to do something else, like, I don't know, take up smoking cigars, for example, or some other pursuit? We also have no feedback effects. So if we're devastating the agricultural industry in Brazil, we're putting lots of people out of work, that tends to have a negative impact on their health also. So, you know, in terms of the balance of health impacts there, at the moment we have no feedback effects. We do in other applications of this around infectious disease, for example, in terms of linking epidemiology and the CG approach, but not in terms of this particular example here. So summary, this was designed to just sort of illustrate some of the issues around combining health and economic effects together rather than just focusing on them individually. The study itself throws a few things out there, like if we go for these healthy eating messages, somewhere like the UK would benefit a lot from that in a health sense and have negligible economic impact. But actually a country like Brazil would be the reverse. They'd stand to gain very little health, but actually would gain to lose a lot from an economic sense. And that can give you some interesting issues there. We're going to policy issues, of course, around who's going to be an ally or who's going to be an adversary in particular policy circles. Again, if we get into that around what particular way of reducing saturated fat consumption, what it would indicate is that something which goes for trying to spread the hit across a number of animal source foods may well be better than going for just hitting one or two particular products. So again, we can get into some issues there about how we translate this into policy messages or positioning for a particular intervention which we wish to pursue. So just to conclude, bring it back to our sort of the issues here around the systems approaches, to say what we would say is it's very important to combine these different forms of models together, to identify winners and losers. And although this sort of analysis was simplistic, it was designed that way just to highlight that if we look at these things together, then it does illustrate this need to consider these systems interactions across all sorts of levels, from the very macro, which we heard this morning, through right down to the biological and cellular level, if we're going to tackle some of these important issues. How's that for time?